Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
When you're searching for clean, non-corrupt government, where do you go? You go to Ukraine and Illinois, right? Wrong, my fellow Chumbalones. Wrong. The Kiev way is the Chicago way. And if you don't believe me, just ask Hunter Biden and his dad, Joe.
I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Oh, son of a bitch. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
And in Chicago, just the other day, another Democrat with his fat little fingers in many cookie jars just got a visit from the feds. State Senator Martin Sandoval. It's an investigation without a name, but you know some of the players have been nabbed. We've seen Alderman Ed Burke indicted on extortion. His wife just made chief judge of the Illinois Supreme Court. And not indicted in the federal probe, but cooperating, is former Alderman Danny Happy Ending Solis, with the massage parlors and the fondness for Asian girls and the Viagra. And others have been raided too, all friends of Boss Madigan and the Noose Titans. Right, Mike? So who is Marty Sandoval? Marty Sandoval, whose offices were raided just the other day by the feds, and his house in Gage Park. Marty started out as a flunky for the Hispanic Democratic Organization. Run out of City Hall, back in the Daily days, it was really the Hispanic Daily Organization. And it was run by Daily's servant, the mysterious Whispering Vic Reyes. Hey, Whispering Vic. How are you feeling about now? What happens next? We're going to have to stay tuned. But if I were you, I'd Google the name Sheldon Silver, who was Boss Madigan in New York just a few years ago, until he ran into a problem. But can we have some happy news? A capitalist rises in the Chicago sports world, reaching down to rescue me from those cold mud pits of sports fan hell. Joe Mansueto, unabashed capitalist, started Morningstar in his apartment with just a few thousand dollars, worth billions now, purchased the Chicago Fire, my favorite soccer team. He's our guest. We're going to ask him, I guess, about the name. Will he keep the name? And how does he apply those business analytics to the job of finding good players so the Fire can win? Joining me, as always, is my friend and co-host and former goalkeeper himself, Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Rokon Show with Anna DeVolantis. And me, I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and a member of that great newspaper's editorial board. And you know where you are? With all that Ukrainian natural gas floating around Washington, and you're reminded about my Papu Pete and what he said about politicians. Aftos milai ke gaideros klani. The politician speaks, and the donkeys break wind. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
You know, I've been a Chicago Fire season ticket holder for about 10 years. And for most of that time, I've been in the cold mud pits of hell, of sports fan hell, like a Hieronymus Bosch painting with demons all about. And it's been bad. And we laugh hysterically because we're basically going mad. But the days of laughing hysterically and madness seem to be over now that our next guest is here. Joe Mansueto of Morningstar, who started his business in his apartment with, I think, $80,000 or maybe less, and made a great success of himself and is now the owner of the Chicago Fire. Congratulations and hello.
Thank you very much, John. You know, appreciate the invitation to come on your podcast, and thank you very much for being a long-time die-hard Chicago Fire fan. It's awesome.
We bleed red.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
And it's great. Tell me, why did you do this?
I like to invest according to things that I love, my passions. Morningstar, the company you referenced in the beginning, is centered around a passion that I have, investing. Love that. And soccer is also a passion. I didn't grow up playing soccer, but through my kids who started playing soccer when they were young, first AYSO, coached for a couple years, they went on to club soccer, high school soccer. You know, I got the soccer bug, and I just got hooked on the sport, started watching it professionally.
What was your first league that you got hooked into?
You know, I started following MLS. I watched a little bit of Europe, but the time difference kind of threw me off.
You didn't want to get up early?
I didn't want to get up early. And
Saturday?
Yeah, the accessibility of it all. You've got to buy these premium channels, and you know, it's not as available as MLS. And so I hooked onto MLS quicker than Europe. And I follow Europe casually, but I think it was MLS that I got hooked on more. I remember going to my first Fire game when my son was playing for one of the youth programs of the Fire when he was maybe 10, and it was pouring rain, and they, you know, gave the whole team Fire tickets, and we're up in about 35 degree weather with ponchos on. It's raining, and that was my introduction to an actual Fire game. But I just got hooked on it, and you know, it's one of the few sports where I'll watch two teams, neither of which are my hometown teams, play. I mean, it is a great product that MLS has, 90 minutes of nonstop action, and it's it fits very well in today's lifestyle. It's not a four-hour investment of time. And then somehow, you know, watching your kids play, you just get really hooked on the sport. And that was the genesis of it.
And it doesn't cost $1,000.
Yeah, it's much more.
I mean, at least our games.
Yeah, it doesn't cost a lot. And when you go,
I mean, that's one of the things you talk about, people like hockey players or football players, you know, that is, it the kids and parents spend all that money getting gear and all that stuff, but soccer, $10 pair of shin guards and a pair of cleats, and you're good to go with an open field.
Yeah, that's why it's a global sport, right? Just a ball. But, you know, the MLS experience, it's so different than the other sports. I mean, you talk about low prices, that's one factor. But also the player accessibility. You can go, the players hang around after the game, sign jerseys, autographs. The whole crowd gets into it in a way that doesn't happen in other sports. The big TIFO displays, the chanting, the songs. You know, the crowd is part of the whole experience. You don't get that at a baseball game.
One thing about the crowd is that I've seen it get smaller and smaller over time. And there are a lot of reasons for that, and we can get into it. But how do you bring them back? Because you're going to play in Soldier Field next year, correct?
That's right.
And
well, we're finalizing that, but that's likely to happen.
So I'm one of the 10,000 core, you know, the people that show up at every, right? At every, we show up at all the games. Sometimes there's less than 10, or there has been. And I've seen Section 8 dwindle to, it's sad to see how few, and I expected a lot more had to come when you were the day after you were named. I was expecting, hey, there should be, they wanted Hauptmann out, now where are they? But they weren't there. How do you bring them back?
You know, we've got to do a few things. One, you know, I love our fans. We've got to nurture that fan base, that core that has, you know, so dedicated and just dying for a winning team. And there's a great group of people who are very enthusiastic, passionate about the team, traveling to see the team. And that's a core we need to build from. And I keep growing that. But moreover, you know, we need to win some championships. We need to have a competitive team and bring home some MLS Cups. And, you know, to do that, we need a world-class soccer organization. We need to get out in the neighborhoods, engage with the community. But it's really, I think, starting from what we have, and that's what we have to work with. And we've got a great base to work with. As you point out, there's a great core there. And it used to be bigger, and we need to bring that back and then have a very competitive team that can win us some championships.
You know, Jeff, as a former goalkeeper yourself, I have to comment on Joe Mansueto's wild activity just a few games ago, or maybe the last one game ago. I saw a tweet where Joe Mansueto was standing with fans in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I went out to the game in Cincinnati last weekend.
But you took people took a picture of you sitting, watching the game, being with fans. And to me, that is, given what I know of the Fire's history, to see the owner sitting with fans, I retweeted it, this is how it's done. How did they respond to you?
You know,
it seemed to love you.
Such a great reception. You know, to me, it was a very natural thing to do, to go, you know, here, these people traveled far to come see the team. Why not say hello to them? And just such a warm reception, such a great group of people. You know, I'm somewhat embarrassed to say, humbled to say, you know, when I walked up there, they started to sing, I love Joe Mansueto. I can't render that as they did, especially after a few beers.
Come on, man. Sing it for us.
No, please? I don't think I want that repeated, right. But it was like, wow, I was just so touched that they would do something like that. But it's just, you know, people are just hungry. You know, they're hungry for some change that'll bring home some championships to stir things up a bit. And they want to see this team succeed. And so, you know, we've got a responsibility to deliver on that.
My friend and seatmate, or a fellow who sits a few rows in front of me for years, Sean Carroll, his handle is Sparky G for Sparky, the Fire mascot, but I can't stand Sparky. Anyway, he asks, okay, since he's from a finance background, a company that uses analytics to rate damn near anything, does he expect to use the same style and tools in scouting and player development?
You know, absolutely. I think it's one of the areas we need to invest in and grow and expand. And this is a phenomenon that's happening across all sports. Going heavy on the analytics side, it's a big data world. There's a lot of players globally. I mean, you look at baseball and some other sports that are more domestic focused. Soccer's global. You've got to keep track of players around the world. It's a lot of data. You know, what's important, really analyzing the game, every aspect of the game. It's the money ball world of, you know, where do you get value? Where do you want to put your resources? You know, I've got a call tomorrow with one of the world's leading experts on soccer analytics. I'm going to talk to him about kind of ideas he might have for us. But yeah, it's in an area we need to invest in. The competition's doing it. We need to do it. We're doing some of it. I don't want to say that there's nothing going on at the Fire organization, but I think everybody's trying to get better in it. And we need to be really, really, have a really strong capability around sports analytics. So it's a good question. And the answer is yes, absolutely.
How do you do that? I mean, what is sports analytics as it pertains to soccer?
You know, it's a couple things. One is you've got to have the data on global players. So just a large database of current players, up and coming juniors. And then you have to have some insight about how to use that data. Having the data doesn't give you the answer. You know, you have to have that insight of, it's like Moneyball. You know, they were looking for players who score runs. That's how you win baseball games. Who can score runs? Doesn't matter what you look like. You know, you could be overweight, but if you get a lot of walks and you can score one runs,
right,
you know, that's a good thing. And so what are the key drivers in soccer that get you wins? And so really looking at every aspect of the game, you know, for example, maybe throw-ins. Somebody who can do great throw-ins is a huge advantage. And, you know, analyzing that aspect and maybe finding players who are really good at that is a good place to put some money. I'm not sure if that's the right place, but as an example of looking at every aspect of the game, how important is goalkeeping? Do you want to put more emphasis on that versus a striker? Those kind of issues.
My soccer expert, my barber, Rafael Rea from Naples.
A regular contributor to this podcast.
Regular contributor. And my two boys, soccer experts, tell me the way to begin is with the spine of a team.
Yeah.
Center backs, center mid, up the middle. Goalkeeper, obviously. Do you see that?
Yeah. You know, if you talk to Nelson Rodriguez, our general manager and president, he would say the same thing. You want a really strong spine. And so that's the backbone of the team. And that's a good place to begin. You know, that you can build around that. So I think our philosophy is in alignment with that view of building a strong spine.
So how did you use analytics in, I mean, I can say analytics, and I don't even know. I can barely balance my checkbook. My wife handles all that. She's doing the house sale and all that. I just write a column. But how did you go about changing the business environment to bring analytics and all that into Morningstar? And how do you grow that in a culture, in a business culture?
So at Morningstar, what we did, you know, if you turn the clock back to 1984, institutional investors had great information. Individuals had barely nothing. So the premise of the company when I started was to bring institutional caliber information down to individuals and make that widely available to democratize investment data. I was a former analyst here in Chicago at an investment firm. So I kind of knew what the landscape looked like in terms of what institutional investors had. So to bring some of those tools and analytics down to the individual level so that individuals, advisors could make smarter investment decisions was the premise. And so I have somewhat of a tech background. So I did all the programming, put the databases together, and figured out how to do that. You know, the sports world is different, how the data flows, where you get the data. You know, it's part of it is scouting, too. You have to put together a scouting network. You know, we hired our first scout not long ago, but we need more of them. People can kind of give you that grassroots information in South America, Central America, Mexico, Europe.
North Africa,
feed that database. And so how does that information flow, and where do you get that data? It's different from the financial world where I knew that. But we have to figure that out, and we have to source a lot of that ourselves, presumably.
Are there any companies, or not companies, organizations in sports, maybe even outside of the MLS, that you think that strike you as being, you know, models for growing a fan base quickly and well? Because, I mean, we've got locally, we've had, you know, talked to Rocky Wirtz on the regular, and he's one of those guys that you were talking about, John, about being down with the fans, and he's the type of guy who doesn't sit in the box. He sits right there. He's always
awesome.
And the fans latch onto him almost more than any of the players because he is that persona that feels like he's the biggest fan and he's there for the fans and he wants the fans first and then, you know, then it's the players and then it's the organization. Are there any other organizations that you see in your mind that like a model for what you'd like to see or grow?
Yeah, I love what they're doing in Portland, what Merritt Paulson is doing there, the Timbers Army. You go to one of their games, it's an amazing atmosphere. I mean, they have 6,000 people in the Timbers Army, and they're there with the drums and...
And their stupid Timber Jim, whatever his name is.
Yeah, Timber Joey and
whatever
the victory
is.
Log, and they slice the log and pass it around to the crowd, and they give it to the guy who scored the goals. And they've got these rituals, and it's a family-friendly environment, and some really nice touching things. I don't know if you know the story where... Timber, I don't think it was Joey, it was his predecessor, the guy who originated it. It's a sad story, too, where during one of the games, somebody tapped him on the shoulder and said his daughter had been killed in a car crash. And it was the 87th minute of the game that this happened. And so he went home and he took his other daughter and he sang some song, I can't remember the song, to her. And so now... In every Timbers game, in the 87th minute of the game, the fan starts singing this song that he sang to his daughter after learning his daughter died. But they have traditions like that that they've woven into the culture, the victory log, and really powerful things. But, you know, every city does it different. You know, Seattle's doing some good things. Atlanta's doing some good things. But what we need to do is not copy those cities.
Right. Do your own thing.
We need to do our own thing. And what's truly Chicago? And how do we grow those traditions and amplify those things that are unique to Chicago?
Maybe more than one Piper. Maybe the whole Shannon Rovers, or, you know, like maybe just more than one Piper and a drum.
Yeah, I think a little more than that.
Right.
But that's find those bright spots and kind of build on
it. Here's another. One of my favorite songs for the fire that was sung, I'm told, by Nicole Hack of Section 8 years ago at Soldier Field is Ring of Fire,
mm-hmm,
by Johnny Cash. It just seems like it has the cadence.
Yeah.
It's not You Never Walk Alone, but it's like, it's something like that.
Yeah.
I just throw it out there.
You know, no, I like that.
You don't have to do it.
Ring of Fire, we can do more with.
You're the boss of the fire. Yeah. I'm boss of my column.
Minnesota has Wonderwall, and we need some songs that represent the team.
But you have to get players, and you have to change things on the field and in the organization. Any boss comes in has an idea, especially you, self-made. You didn't inherit your money. You made your money. Fans have commented, you don't have to ask your father-in-law for permission to sign a center back. What is going to happen with the fire organization? Are you going to clean house, or does it depend on the fire winning, you know, somehow pulling, a miracle finish and winning the MLS, getting into the playoffs and winning the MLS Cup, or how does it work?
Well, first, a shout out to my former partner, Andrew Hopman. I mean, Andrew did a lot of good for the team. You know, he invested in the payroll. We have one of the highest payrolls in the league. Did a lot of great things in the community. And so it's not for lack of spending. But in terms of what I, you know, see going forward, my thought is to get better every day. We got to be better this game than the last game. And how do you make every aspect of the organization better continuously? The front office, you know, all those functions we talked about, from scouting, analytics, all those marketing, all those front office functions, to the sporting side, the technical side, and
the winning side,
down to the winning side. That's going to drive the winning side.
Right.
And you've got world-class people in each of those roles. And, you know, today you need the equipment for training. You need psychologists. You need people who are expert in physical fitness.
Top training facility.
All of those things. Yeah, and it's, it's a lot to do. You don't do this overnight, but, you know, you go on a direction and you keep pushing. And so as long as we're pushing hard on all fronts, you know, I'll be happy. But if we're not moving forward, that's when I'll get antsy and make people push.
Where will the fire train if they're no longer at Bridgeview? Bridgeview in the rain and your first experience, it's got to be wonderful, you know. I'm surprised Mike Madigan didn't show up to hold an umbrella over your forehead, over your head.
Well, you know, another shout out, if you'll permit me, is to the mayor of Bridgeview, Steve Landeck.
That's tough for me, but okay.
You know, one of the first things I did when I bought into the team was invite Steve out to lunch and start to get to know him. And I give him tons of credit for engaging with us to figure out a solution that's a win-win. He fought very hard for the residents of Bridgeview. Work out a deal. But we did work out a deal that we're both happy with. We're still good partners, even after we moved to Soldier Field. You know, we're going to continue to train, I guess, to answer your question, at Bridgeview for 5 years is the agreement that we have. It was a 17-year term remaining on the lease. And so we brought that back from 17 down to 5. And we'll continue to train there, the academy and the first team.
Do you see a Fire USL team in Bridgeview?
You know, that could happen down the road. We have the rights to a USL team as
right.
part of our charter.
The lower league. Right.
I could see that being a natural part of our ecosystem of youth program, academy, USL, onto the first team. And so, you know, that's an option we'll have down the road.
So what about the Academy? Is the Academy where you want it to be? Or do you want it to be expanded? It had been had some contractions. Do you want that to be expanded?
You know, absolutely. You know, the plan is to invest in the Academy, and I would love to see us produce more homegrown players. We've got a terrific one today, as you know, Georgi Mihailovic, 20-year-old kid on the U.S. men's national team. Outstanding prospect, or outstanding player. He's no longer a prospect, outstanding player. But we need to produce, you know, one or more of those every year. And so investing in the Academy, it's a long-term proposition. Right. But that's definitely part of the plan.
That takes coaches. That takes investment.
Yeah, it takes top talent. You know, we've got a guy who, you know, is at PSG.
Right.
Kind of overseeing it. And so, again, I think the plan is to invest, to grow it. I was talking to Nelson about it, Rodriguez, yesterday. You know, what we can do to grow the Academy. And it's, you know, part of what we'll work on in our 2020 plan.
It sounds like you're not laying the groundwork for any significant changes with either Nelson or Pano, or are you?
You know, I've enjoyed getting to know both Nelson and Pano over the past year and a half since I bought into the team. You know, I believe in both of these guys. I think they're outstanding individuals, outstanding talent regarding soccer. And so I think the plan is to finish the season strong, focus on that, and then we'll look at everybody, you know, in the organization. But I believe in both these guys, you know. To my mind, I'd like to see both of them come back next year and make sure that they've got the resources to execute.
Isn't that the thing? I mean, you've been a sports fan for a long time. There's, 26 baseball managers, right? They get fired all the time. You know that there are more guys that could manage teams, but what separates the good teams from the not good teams is not the manager, is it?
Yeah.
Isn't it the players?
Yeah.
On the field?
It's part and parcel. You can't separate them. You know, you can have a great manager. If the team is not spent for the right players, that person's not going to look good. And so we want to make sure that Nelson and Pano are armed with resources that they can execute with. And so, you can't have a snap judgment. Hey, the season hasn't gone. And, you know, they're both frustrated. I don't think either of them are happy with our season to date. Even though we're still in it, we can still make the playoffs. But if you talk to both of them, they're frustrated, as they should be. But again, it's a complex issue that goes beyond just their individual talent.
Speaking as a longtime season ticket holder, I wouldn't mind if I knew, like, you know how the Cubs went and just basically tanked for 2-3 years, building talent. The fans understood with the new owner, they understood with Ricketts, they understood what was going on. And they accepted it, knowing that down the road there would be results, and there were results. They came back in one of the greatest, it hurts me as a Sox fan to say it, but they came back 3-1, down 3-1 in the World Series. You can't get any better than that. Would the fans, Fire fans, accept a complete and total rebuild of the club with the knowledge that you would rebuild it to win the Supporters' Shield, which is the championship of the league as far as I'm concerned, and the other trophies, and the MLS Cup, which satisfies television investors? Sorry, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying, would they accept that?
I think they would. I agree with part of what you're saying in terms of skewing younger to get some promising players. I think right now, if you look at the team, we skew a bit older. And the tendency has been to hire some terrific players, but who are a bit older. And I'd love to see us skew younger. And that doesn't mean 100% total rebuild. You're not going to bring that, you know, there's no value of people who are older. But you can complement, you know, some experienced number of people with a lot of younger, promising players who are 20, 22, 24, who could have a long run with you, and you could build a core of a team that could have a long run. And I think the fans would understand, you know, I hope it would mean tanking.
Would not.
It doesn't necessarily mean tanking,
right?
You know, for a few years. But, you know, it's a bit of an investment in the future versus trying to have the best team today, where you could spend a lot to get these aging European stars who are going to be with you 1 or 2 years, and maybe that does give you a slightly higher probability, but then 1 year later, you're in the same situation.
Exactly.
And you've got to rebuild. It's expensive. Why not get these young, promising players, have a long run? And so I would say skew younger versus 100% have to be that way, that there's some complement of experienced talent that could go with that younger group.
I noticed in your interviews with sports people, you know, they'd bring up an aging talent who may have scored a fantastic goal just a few days ago, and Chicharito, and then you have to respond to the Chicharito thing, and they get all excited because it's a name.
Yeah.
But I'm not a soccer guy, but I want to see young kids who are talented, not just some old poacher that you're going to, who puts the ball in the net, obviously, that, you know what I mean? I want to see a team built. I don't know. I'm crazy.
I totally agree with that. I think people want to see a winning team.
You also want to fall in love with characters, right? For someone doesn't see them develop and see them come up.
That's right.
And be, remember, like, I remember when, you know, and now look at us now, that kind of stuff.
When Georgie was telling me that all he ate was pizza and Coke, and now he's changed his diet. Yeah, I remember that one. Sean got that interview for me. Yeah.
And I also don't think it served MLS well to be seen as this is the place where people come to retire.
Yeah.
That we, if we want to be competitive with Europe, we need, you know, talent that's on the ascent, not this is where people come when they can't play any longer in Europe. And so, you know, part of it, we need to get this mindset of growing our own talent. I very much am in agreement with that, that you can't rely exclusively on hiring, you know, older, you know, European talent. I will say, though, that Basti's been terrific. You know, he's added so much to the team. But I don't think you want that in every position, I guess, is my point.
You need the brain. He has the great soccer brain. And he's a legend. And it's a pleasure. It's like a treat to be able to watch
it. It is.
But I also want to see kids who can run,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you have to run.
Yeah.
And he knows that. And I mean, he'd be the first person to understand that.
Yeah. At Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp, I think, asked 2 questions, you know, do you like to run and do you like to train? So those are his 2 questions for players.
Yeah.
And
you know if they're going to run because you have those, speaking of data analytics, you have those monitors on them.
Yeah.
Right? So you could see, like, say if you had a right back with pigtails, 2 pigtails, like maybe you may have had one, you know, who, like, maybe not have, before your time, who may not have run so much. You could see, you know, and whether he's complaining that Harry Ship, oh, I can't run because Harry's on that wing. I have to stay back. Okay, fine. But at least you know, right?
Yeah, they all wear the monitors, so you have all the data.
That's the evil side of me coming out. You see that? I held it back. Another business question.
Yeah.
I agree with you that the MLS is growth. I think soccer is going to, I know people say you're crazy, but I see it happening. I just see it. I see it with kids. I see young people. But the business question is there a merger down the road with MLS and the Mexican League to have a North American league, you know, a big league like that with maybe, you know, with, say, a North American League, Canada. They're already in it with Toronto and Montreal, but United States and Mexico.
You know, I don't have great insight into that. It strikes me as unlikely. You know, I think the direction is probably more various tournaments involving Mexico. You know, we had one, a new one this year, the League's Cup with Mexico. And Cruz Azul came to play us, and great turnout. And so I think it's probably more in the direction of tournaments rather than an outright merger. Though, again, I don't really have insights into how the leagues are working at that level and whether the Mexican League is interested in that. I'd be surprised.
And speaking of things you do have good insight into, I read some quotes and followed some stories about you. Obviously, you're extremely successful, but you seem to have this mindset and this persona about you that's very even keel, but very much about being in touch with nature and people and not one of these kind of tight suits that come down with a hammer on things.
He's not wearing a suit and tie today. That really, I expected Brooks Brothers when I'm going to talk to a billionaire.
Sorry to disappoint.
No, not at all. I mean, it's refreshing. You speak to that a little bit about how your style of managing people or managing a business, how it reflects of as a person.
Yeah, my style is pretty informal. You're right. I'm not the kind of button down suit and tie guy, but I like a lot of face to face interaction. So it's like calling up Landeck, having lunch with him, getting to know him, and just getting out, talking to people, wandering around. I think till Morningstar got to 200 or 300 people, every time people were paid, this dates me a little bit, but we actually had physical paychecks. I'd go around every other Friday and hand out paychecks to everybody. When it got to over 200, I stopped. It got to be a little too time consuming, but you get to know everybody, have a little face to face time.
And you're the boss giving them the check.
Yeah. So you're associated with good things.
You understand how you are getting paid from this guy giving you the money. Yeah.
That could be part of it. I don't know. But I like to be present. I like to be visible. I like, if you go to Morningstar, there's no private offices. It's all open art environment. People wander around. It's meant to facilitate, teamwork, transparency. I like to have fun with business, and so I like to kind of be out there in the mix. I'm a pretty even-keeled person. I have a pretty regular schedule, and I've kind of been that way my whole life. So kind of get up early, kind of work out, do my thing during the day. Pretty regular schedule.
You do take off in August? You still do that?
I used to do that for many years at Morningstar. We have a place up in Michigan. And so instead of taking off 2 weeks full-time, I used to take off 4 weeks part-time. I'd work in the mornings, take every afternoon off, but I'd be up in Michigan for 4 weeks and be in, shorts, t-shirts, flip-flops for 4 weeks. And it was great,
Fishing?
Not a lot of fishing. My kids were young, so we'd kind of follow in their activities, doing whatever they're doing. A lot of biking, swimming, but just hanging out with the family. And, then also thinking about, Morningstar the next year in August. What are we going to do in the following year for our plans? And so it was good. So I don't, now that my kids are older, high school sports start in Illinois like August 10th or 9th. So it's kind of cut into the Michigan time. So we don't get up there as much now that my kids are doing all these activities.
Plus you have now August is a big time for soccer.
Yeah, no, that's right. And so my schedule's
enough of your retirement, man.
Yeah, I know. That's all. Now I've got to actually roll up my sleeves and work and go to these soccer games. So I know there'll be a lot of sympathy for me.
In the, one feature of, American soccer that I've always been interested in is the fan culture. I see it in American soccer as, for lack of a better term, people who listen to this podcast or read my column know I'm rather conservative. At least I am. I'm unabashedly so. But I don't find many conservatives going to soccer games. All my friends in the soccer world are basically not, if not Bernie bros, on the way there, And so how does a capitalist mesh with that kind of progressive political call? How does that work?
That's a good question. Yeah, I feel like as a free market capitalist today, you're increasingly in the minority. And it's funny how the world has shifted a bit.
Right.
But basically, I would say I'm fiscally conservative, socially liberal. I'm kind of in the middle there. And so I think I relate to the socially liberal part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you talk to people, I think most people in terms of fiscal, they're not for massive spending. Maybe I'm wrong. They
yes,
like
you
some
are wrong.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. But it's, I think it, they identify more with the socially liberal part, I think, the key value there.
Right.
But I think there is an underappreciation for capitalism today. And, you know, all the great things that we have, iPhones and Starbucks and Amazon, Google, you know, a lot for no cost or little cost. You know, this is the fruits of capitalism, you know, and you don't want to kill that golden goose that incentivizes entrepreneurs and
that brings freedom to the world.
Yeah, it's unlike anything in human history.
So then change your mascot from Sparky and call him Hayek. I have a friend of mine who has a dog named Hayek, and that would be awesome. You know?
Love it. Frederick Hayek.
Frederick Hayek.
Yeah. There's a name not many of your viewers or listeners
know. Our listeners do.
They know that? Oh, you've talked about him before?
Yeah. Okay. And a friend of mine who's a radio guy and a conservative, Dan Proft, who hates soccer.
Yes.
And I swear to God, Joe, if you called him up and said, you know, Proft, I think you hate soccer. Would you like to come? Oh, he would just freak and he would come. So
well, I love your audience even more then.
One thing about Chicago is that Chicago's experienced some tough financial times.
Yep.
And the ledgers look bleak, like a Dickensian novel about to happen to us. But not only in Chicago, throughout Illinois. As a businessman, how do you see the finances of the city and state, and how does that apply to your new business, soccer?
Yeah, I mean, it drives me nuts, you know, the finances of Illinois and Chicago. You know, a city like this should be in very strong financial condition. You know, world-class city, thriving business community. But through years of mismanagement, you know, we've ended up at the bottom of the list in terms of state finances. I mean, how could Illinois be at the bottom? You know, this vibrant economy. And it's just a shame what's happened to Illinois and Chicago. And it, you know, people are trying, you know, Rahm Emanuel tried. And I wish Lori Lightfoot all the best. But, you know, they've been dealt tough hands. You know, the pension issue has been kicked down the road for many, many years. Truth has not been faced in terms of what the true costs are.
Right.
And so many bad practices of, you know, somebody's last day at their job, their salary goes up, that gets annuitized, and their pension payments are much higher than they should be.
It's the Chicago way, baby.
Yeah,
that's how
and
they
so
do it.
All those bad practices, you know, the bills come and due. And it's just really unfortunate. And so I think there's going to be some tough decisions. I don't have an easy answer for it. I don't think there is one. But I think it's, you know, there's got to be a lot of shared pain, you know. And, you know, one thing that to me doesn't get talked about enough is, you know, reducing expenses. you know, what can we do? You know, Andy Shaw, former television commentator here, has written some really good things on Illinois has the most units of government of any state in the country. That we have one school district, a school district managing one school, a park district managing one park, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Through these patronage jobs that have been created that don't go away, but somehow slimming down, benchmarking us against the best states. And nobody wants to do that. It's hard work to consolidate, save money. It's easier to raise taxes.
Yes.
And politicians always want more money. You know, as a business leader, I often wanted more money. But my board would say, cut cost.
Right.
You know, if things aren't going well, you want more money. But hey, you know, look to yourself. Doctor, heal thyself before you ask for more money. And so, you know, I would love to see some combination of revenue and cost cutting. But, you know, with government, it only grows, you know, it doesn't seem to ever contract. And so I think Illinois has room for that from what I read.
They call it the Leviathan for a reason.
Yeah.
Have you met with Lori Lightfoot, Mayor Lightfoot, who's a fan of this podcast?
You know, I
oddly enough, I don't know why, but she is.
You know, I have not. I've known Rahm Emanuel a long time, I've not met Mayor Lightfoot. I look forward to meeting her. I've met with one of her deputies, deputy mayors, who's terrific.
Oh, talking about where you're going to build your new stadium?
No, just
Michael Reese. Michael Reese area? That sounds good.
Hey, we're going to make Soldier Field work, John. That's the plan.
Yeah. Okay. But after Soldier Field, you have 5 years at Soldier Field, right? Or three and
yeah, an three option. And an option for three.
All right.
Or a couple of options for three.
Do you see a, where do you see, I mean, do you see a soccer-specific stadium, or do you see 60,000, 70,000 fans filling Soldier Field like they used to do in Atlanta and or used to do in Seattle?
Well, the latter is what excites me. I'd love to see us fill Soldier Field with 62,000 Fire fans and have that a robust, incredible atmosphere. I think, you know, there's been a couple games recently in Soldier Field, soccer games that have sold out.
Yeah.
Club America versus Chivas, two Mexican teams sold out, 62,000 fans. The Gold Cup was held in Chicago in August. U.S. men's national team against Mexican's national team sold out, 62,000 fans. So the fan base is here.
And a lot of fans at the MLS All-Star game.
Yeah.
To see Gareth Bale and everybody, right?
Yeah, the fan base is here. And, you know, so it's one step at a time. Let's see if we can make that work, see what that environment looks like. And I'd rather expose 62,000 fans to a match day experience rather than 25,000, what a typical soccer-specific stadium might hold. And so if we have the capacity, if we can make that work, and Atlanta's done it, Seattle's done it. And so to me, that's the focus right now.
Joe Mansueto of Morningstar, and now the chairman, president, what's the title? You have owner?
I'm not big boss, on titles, yeah.
The gaffer of the Chicago Fire. Taking us out of the mud pits of hell. Good luck to you on that. And I'm happy that you're the owner of the team, and let's see how it proceeds.
Thanks, Sean. Happy to come on again.
I'd love to. And really, last question.
I'm around.
I noticed that we've had a lot of discussion, you know, should the name be changed? Should the badge be changed? Should the cult, you know, the marketing of the, you know, the symbolic aspects of the club be changed? And you're on record saying you love the name, correct?
Absolutely. I do love the name. You know, when we decided that we were going to move downtown, you know, management wanted to take a look at all aspects of the name, the brand, the crest, all of that. Hey, if you're going to move, you can change anything. Now would be the time. And so they're at the final stage of that analysis, and we'll see what they say. But you're right. I love the name. You know, as a Chicagoan, it means a lot to me. It's what created this city. The fire of 1871, people didn't pick up and leave. They had this great tragedy. City burns down. And what do? They roll up their sleeves. They dig in. They build the city back in a bigger, bolder way. The Burnham Plan, the whole lakefront. And it's, to me, it's that spirit of persevering through no matter what setbacks come your way, you know, pushing through, that is the spirit of Chicago. And it is represented by that name and is a great metaphor for a team.
And you did stand for a picture in a column I wrote. I was struck by where you wanted to stand in front of, in the stadium at Toyota or what it was, SeatGeek, whatever it's called now. There is a pillar there's a poster on it or a painting.
Oh, yeah.
The Fire motto, tradition, honor, passion. You decide, I mean, I didn't think there was a random place.
Yeah, right? It was not. It was thoughtfully chosen. It's meant to highlight those values, which I think are very important to the team. They've been with the team a long time and are pretty core to the identity of the team.
Joe Mansueto, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, it's been fun. Always love talking soccer.
We'll talk politics next time.
Oh, but the fire went wild. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire.
You know, it's the Fire's playoff chances are so complicated, and it really doesn't matter because they're really not that great of a team. I mean, even if they get in the playoffs, they're not going to stay in long. Maybe not. The main thing is building a team. You're on our team. Is that a pretty clumsy segue? But true, you're on our team. If you're listening to Jeff and me, you're on our team. And you know what teammates need? They need support for each other. And it's not just about rolling around on the grass and hugging each other, okay? It's about you finding the podcast, The Chicago Way, on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you find your podcast, and subscribing free, because you don't pay for this. It's free to you. What we do need, though, is for you to find us on iTunes especially and write us a kick-ass review. I want 5-star reviews, because this is the fastest-growing podcast around, and it's the only podcast where you're going to hear an alternative view. And we're not afraid of Room 101 and the rat cage. If you hold up 4 fingers, I'll count 4 fingers. I won't say 5 or 3 or 2. This isn't Room 101. This is the Chicago Way. For Joe Mansueto, unabashed capitalist, founder of Morningstar, using his analytics to find us some good soccer players, a sports owner in a tough sports town. And for Jeff Carlin, the executive producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis, co-host here, and my dear friend. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune and member of that great newspaper's editorial board. Join us again next time on The Chicago Way on WGN+.